signs that said, "Hell no, we won't go." What about the car accident boy buried with a McCarthy sticker on the lid of his coffin? What about the girl with stars on her forehead? They have fallen now, I imagine, from her parchment skin. These are the soldiers of love who never sold insurance. These are the fashion dudes who never went out of fashion. Sometimes at night, I think of hippies asleep in the earth. Here's to Tommy. Drink to the motherfucker. For DF. In 1999, while taking a walk near my home, I was hit by a guy driving a van. He was doing about 40, and the collision should have killed me. I guess I must have taken some sort of half-assed evasive action at the last moment, although I don't remember doing that. What I do remember is the aftermath. An event that occurred in 2 or 3 seconds beside a rural main highway resulted in 2 or 3 years of physical therapy and slow rehabilitation. During those long months spent recovering some range of movement in my right leg and then learning to walk again, I had plenty of time to reflect on what some philosophers have called the problem of pain. This story is about that, and I wrote it years later when the worst of my own pain had receded to a steady low mutter. Like several other stories in this book, The Little Green God of Agony is a search for closure, but like all the stories in this book, its principal purpose is to entertain. Although life experiences are the basis of all stories, I am not in the business of confessional fiction.
The Little Green God of Agony, read by Hope Davis.
"I was in an accident," Newsom said. Catherine MacDonald, sitting beside the bed and attaching one of 4 TENS units to Newsom's scrawny thigh, just below the basketball shorts he now always wore, did not look up. Her face was carefully blank. She was a piece of human furniture in this big bedroom, where she now spent most of her working life, and that was the way she liked it. Attracting Mr. Newsom's attention was usually a bad idea, as all of his employees knew. But her thoughts ran on just the same. "Now you tell them that you actually caused the accident, because you think taking responsibility makes you look like a hero."
"Actually," Newsom said, "I caused the accident. Not so tight, Cat, please."
She could have pointed out, as she had at the start, that TENS units lost their efficacy if they weren't drawn tight to the outraged nerves they were supposed to soothe. But she was a fast learner. She loosened the Velcro strap a little while her thoughts ran on. "The pilot told you there were thunderstorms in the Omaha area?"
"The pilot told me there were thunderstorms in that part of the world," Newsom continued.
The two men listened closely. Jensen had heard it all before, of course, but you always listened closely when the man doing the talking was the 6th richest man, not just in America, but in the world. 3 of the other 5 mega-rich guys were dark-complected fellows who wore robes and drove around desert countries in armored Mercedes-Benzes.
"But I told him it was imperative that I make that meeting."
"But I told him it was imperative that I make that meeting." The man sitting next to Newsom's personal assistant was the one who interested her, in an anthropological sort of way. His name was Rideout. He was tall and thin, maybe 60, wearing plain gray pants and a white shirt buttoned all the way to his scrawny neck, which was red with overshaving.
Cat supposed he'd wanted to get a close one before meeting the 6th richest man in the world. Beneath his chair was the only item he'd carried into this meeting, a long black lunchbox with a curved top meant to hold a thermos. A working man's lunchbox, although what he claimed to be was a minister. So far, Mr. Rideout hadn't said a word, but Cat didn't need her ears to know what he was. The whiff of charlatan about him was even stronger than the smell of his aftershave. In 15 years as a nurse specializing in pain patients, she had met her share. At least this one wasn't wearing any crystals. "Now tell them about your revelation," she thought as she carried her stool around to the other side of the bed. It was on casters, but Newsom didn't like the sound when she rolled on it. She might have told another patient that carrying the stool wasn't in her contract, but when you were being paid $5,000 a week for what were essentially human caretaking services, you kept your smart remarks to yourself. Nor did you tell the patient that emptying and washing out bedpans wasn't in your contract. Although lately, her silent compliance was wearing a little thin. She felt it happening, like the fabric of a shirt that had been washed and worn too many times. Newsom was speaking primarily to the fellow in the farmer-goes-to-town getup. "As I lay on the runway in the rain among the burning pieces of a $14 million aircraft, most of the clothes torn off my body, that'll happen when you hit pavement and roll 50 or 60 feet, I had a revelation." Actually, two of them, Cat thought, as she strapped a second TENS unit around his other, wasted, flabby, scarred leg. "Actually, two revelations," Newsom said. "One was that it was very good to be alive, although I understood even before the pain that's been my constant companion for the last 2 years started to eat through the shock that I had been badly hurt. The second was that the word imperative is used very loosely by most people, including my former self. There are only two imperatives in human existence. One is life itself. The other is freedom from pain. Do you agree, Reverend Rideout?" And before Rideout could agree, for surely he would do nothing else, Newsom said in his waspy, hectoring old man's voice, "Not so goddamn tight, Cat. How many times do I have to tell you?" "Sorry," she murmured, and loosened the strap. Melissa, the housekeeper, looking trim in a white blouse and high-waisted white slacks, came in with a coffee tray. Jensen accepted a cup, along with 2 packets of artificial sweetener. The new guy, the bottom-of-the-barrel so-called reverend, only shook his head. Maybe he had some kind of holy coffee in his lunchbox thermos. Cat didn't get an offer. When she took coffee, she took it in the kitchen with the rest of the help. Or in the summer house. Only this wasn't summer. It was November, and wind-driven rain lashed the windows. "Shall I turn you on, Mr. Newsom, or would you prefer that I leave now?" She didn't want to leave. She'd heard the whole story many times before, the important meeting in Omaha, the crash, Andrew Newsom ejected from the burning plane, the broken bones, chipped spine, and dislocated hip, the 24 months of unrelieved suffering that had followed, and it bored her. But Rideout was kind of interesting. Other charlatans would undoubtedly follow, now that all reputable relief resources had been exhausted. But Rideout was the first, and Cat wanted to observe how the farmer-looking fellow would go about separating Andy Newsom from a large chunk of his cash. Or how he would try. Newsom hadn't amassed his fortune by being stupid. But of course, he wasn't the same man he had been, no matter how real his pain might be. On that subject, Cat had her own opinions. But this was the best job she'd ever had, at least in terms of money. And if Newsom wanted to continue suffering, wasn't that his choice? Go ahead, honey, turn me on. He waggled his eyebrows at her. Once the lechery might have been real. Cat thought Melissa might have information on that subject. But now it was just a pair of shaggy eyebrows working on muscle memory. Cat plugged the cords into the control unit and flicked the switch. Properly attached, the TENS units would have sent a weak electrical current into Newsom's muscles, a therapy that seemed to have some ameliorative effects, although no one could say exactly why, or if they were entirely of the placebo variety. Be that as it might, they would do nothing for Newsom tonight. Hooked up as loosely as they were, they had been reduced to expensive joy buzzers.
"Shall I stay?" he said. "Therapy!"
The Lord wounded in battle commands, and I obey. She bent over to pull her chest of goodies out from under the bed. It was filled with tools many of her past clients referred to as implements of torture. Jensen and Rideout paid no attention to her. They continued to look at Newsom, who might or might not have been granted revelations that had changed his priorities and outlook on life, but who still enjoyed holding court. He told them about awakening in a cage of metal and mesh. There were steel gantries called external fixators on both legs and one arm to immobilize joints that had been repaired with about 100 steel pins. Actually, 17. Cat had seen the x-rays. The fixators were anchored in the outraged and splintered femurs, tibiae, fibulae, humerus, radius, ulna. His back was encased in a kind of chainmail girdle that went from his hips to the nape of his neck. He talked about sleepless nights that seemed to go on not for hours but for years. He talked about the crushing headaches. He told them about how even wiggling his toes caused pain all the way up to his jaw, and the shrieking agony that bit into his legs when the doctors insisted that he move them, fixators and all, so he wouldn't entirely lose their function. He told them about the bed sores and how he bit back howls of hurt and outrage when the nurses attempted to roll him on his side so the sores could be flushed out.
"There have been another dozen operations in the last 2 years," he said with a kind of dark pride.
Actually, Cat knew, there had been 5. 2 of those to remove the external fixators when the bones were sufficiently healed. Unless you included the minor procedure to reset his broken fingers, that was. Then you could say there were 6. But she didn't consider surgical stuff necessitating no more than local anesthetic to be operations. If that were the case, she'd had a dozen herself, most of them while listening to Muzak in a dentist's chair. "Now we get to the false promises," she thought, as she placed a gel pad in the crook of Newsom's right knee and laced her hands together on the hanging hot water bottles of muscle beneath his right thigh. "That comes next."
"The doctors promised me the pain would abate," Newsom said. His eyes were fixed on Rideout. "That in 6 weeks I'd only need the narcotics before and after my physical therapy sessions with the Queen of Pain here. That I'd be walking again by the summer of 2010. Last summer." He paused for effect. "Reverend Rideout, those were false promises. I have almost no flexion in my knees at all, and the pain in my hips and back is beyond description. The doctors, stop, Cat, stop."
She had raised his right leg to a 10-degree angle, perhaps a little more, not even enough to hold the cushioning pad in place.
"Let it go down. Let it go down. God damn it."
Cat relaxed her hold on his knee, and the leg returned to the hospital bed. 10 degrees, possibly 12, whoop-de-doo. Sometimes she got it all the way to 15, and the left leg, which was a little better, to 20 degrees of flex, before he started hollering like a chicken shit kid who sees a hypodermic needle in the school nurse's hand. The doctors guilty of false promises had not been guilty of false advertising. They had told him the pain was coming. Cat had been there as a silent onlooker during several of those consultations. They had told him he would swim in pain before those crucial tendons, shortened by the accident and frozen in place by the fixators, stretched out and once again became limber. He would have plenty of pain before he was able to get the bend in his knees back to 90 degrees, which meant before he would be able to sit in a chair or behind the wheel of a car. The same was true of his back and his neck. The road to recovery led through the land of pain. That was all. These were true promises Andrew Newsom had chosen not to hear. It was his belief, never stated baldly in words of one syllable, but undoubtedly one of the stars he steered by, that the sixth richest man in the world should not have to visit the land of pain under any circumstances, only the Costa del Sol of full recovery. Blaming the doctors followed as day follows night, and of course he blamed fate. Things like this were not supposed to happen to guys like him. Melissa came back with cookies on a tray. Newsom waved a hand, twisted and scarred in the accident, at her irritably.
"No one's in the mood for baked goods, Lissa."
Here was another thing Cat MacDonald had discovered about those golden dollar babies who had amassed assets beyond ordinary comprehension. They felt very confident about speaking for everyone in the room. Melissa gave her a little Mona Lisa smile, then turned, almost pirouetted, and left the room, glided from the room. She had to be at least 45, but looked younger. She wasn't sexy, nothing so vulgar. Rather, there was an ice queen glamour about her that made Cat think of Ingrid Bergman. Icy or not, Cat supposed men would wonder how that chestnut hair would look freed from its clips and all mussed up. How her coral lipstick would look smeared on her teeth and up one cheek. Cat, who considered herself dumpy, told herself at least once a day that she wasn't jealous of that smooth, cool face or that tight, heart-shaped bottom. Cat returned to the other side of the bed and prepared to lift Newsom's left leg until he yelled at her again to stop. God damn it, did she want to kill him? "If you are another patient, I'd tell you the facts of life," she thought. "I'd tell you to stop looking for shortcuts, because there are none, not even for the sixth richest man in the world. I'd help you if you'd let me, but as long as you keep looking for a way to buy your way out of that bed, you're on your own." She placed the pad under his knee, grasped the hanging bags of flesh that should have been hardening up again by now, began to bend the leg, waited for him to scream at her to stop. And she would, because $5,000 a week added up to a cool quarter mil a year. Did he know that part of what he was buying was her complicity in his failure to improve? How could he not? "Now tell them about the doctors. Geneva, London, Madrid, Mexico City."
"I've been to doctors all over the world," he told right out.
The Reverend still hadn't said a word, just sat there with the red wattles of his overshaved neck hanging over his button-to-the-neck country preacher shirt. He was wearing big yellow work boots. The heel of one almost touched his black lunchbox.
"Teleconferencing would be the easier way to go, given my condition. But of course that doesn't cut it in cases like mine, so I've gone in person in spite of the pain it causes me. We've been everywhere, haven't we, Cat?"
"Indeed we have," she said, very slowly continuing to bend the leg, on which he would have been walking by now if he weren't such a child about the pain. Such a spoiled baby. On crutches, yes, but walking. And in another year, he would have been able to throw the crutches away. Only in another year, he would still be here, in this $200,000 state-of-the-art hospital bed. And she would still be with him, still taking his hush money. How much would be enough? 2 million? She told herself that now, but she told herself not so long ago 500,000 would be enough, and had since moved the goalposts. Money was wretched that way.
"We've seen specialists in Mexico, Geneva, London, Rome, Paris. Where else, Kat?"
"Vienna," she said. "And San Francisco, of course." Newsom snorted.
"Doctors there told me I was manufacturing my own pain. Hysterical conversion, he said, to keep from doing the hard work of rehabilitation. But he was a packy, and a queer packy. How's that for a combo?"
He gave a brief bark of laughter, then peered at Rideout.
"I'm not offending you, am I, Reverend?"
Rideout moved his head side to side in a negative gesture, twice, very slowly.
Good. Stop, Kat, that's enough."
"A little more," she coaxed.
"Stop, I said, that's all I can take."
She let the leg subside and began to manipulate his left arm. That he allowed. He often told people both of his arms had also been broken, but this wasn't true. The left one had only been sprained. He also told people he was lucky not to be in a wheelchair, but the all-the-bells-and-whistles hospital bed suggested strongly that this was luck on which he had no intention of capitalizing in the near future. The all-the-bells-and-whistles hospital bed was his wheelchair. He had ridden all over the world in it.
"Neuropathic pain, it's a great mystery, perhaps insoluble. The drugs no longer work." "The consensus is that I'm suffering from neuropathic pain."
"And cowardice?"
"It's a great mystery."
"Also a good excuse."
"Perhaps insoluble."
"Especially when you don't try."
"The drugs no longer work and the doctors can't help me. That's why I've brought you here, Reverend Rideout. Your references in the matter of healing are very strong."
Rideout stood up. Kat hadn't realized how tall he was. His shadow scared up behind him on the wall even higher, almost to the ceiling. His eyes, sunken deep in their sockets, regarded Newsom solemnly. He had charisma. Of that there could be no doubt. It didn't surprise her. The charlatans of the world couldn't get along without it. But she hadn't realized how much or how strong it was until he got to his feet and towered over them. Jensen was actually craning his neck to take him in. There was movement in the corner of Kat's eye. She looked and saw Melissa standing in the doorway. So now they were all here, except for Tanya, the cook. Outside, the wind rose to a shriek. The glass in the windows rattled.
"I don't heal," Rideout said.
He was from Arkansas, Kat believed. That was where Newsom's latest Gulfstream IV had picked him up, at least. But his voice was accentless and flat.
"No."
Newsom looked disappointed, petulant. Maybe, Kat thought, a little scared.
"I sent a team of investigators, and they assure me that in many cases..."
"I expel."
Up went the shaggy eyebrows.
"I beg your pardon?"
Rideout came to the bed and stood there, with his long-fingered hands laced loosely together at the level of his crotch. His deep-set eyes looked somberly down at the man in the bed.
"I exterminate the pest from the wounded body it's feeding on, just as a bug exterminator would exterminate termites feeding on a house."
Now, Kat thought, I have heard everything. But Newsom was fascinated. Like a kid watching a three-card Monty expert on a street corner, she thought.
"You've been possessed, sir."
"Yes," Newsom said. "That's what it feels like. especially at night. The nights are very long.
Every man or woman who suffers pain is possessed, of course. But in some unfortunate people, you are one. The problem goes deeper. The possession isn't a transient thing, but a permanent condition, one that worsens. Doctors don't believe because they are men of science, but you believe, don't you? Because you're the one who's suffering.
You bet,
Newsom breathed. Cat, sitting beside him on her stool, had to work very hard to keep from rolling her eyes.
In these unfortunates, pain opens the way for a demon god. It's small, but dangerous. It feeds on a special kind of hurt produced only by certain special people.
Genius, Cat thought. Newsom's going to love that.
Once the god finds its way in, pain becomes agony. It will feed until you are all used up. Then it will cast you aside, sir, and move on.
Cat surprised herself by saying, What god would that be? Certainly not the one you preach about. That one is the god of love, or so I grew up believing. Jensen was frowning at her and shaking his head. He clearly expected an explosion from the boss, but a little smile had touched the corner of Newsom's lips.
What do you say to that, Rev?
I say that there are many gods. The fact that our Lord, the Lord God of hosts, rules them all, and on the day of judgment will destroy them all, does not change that. These little gods have been worshipped by people both ancient and modern. They have their powers, and our God sometimes allows those powers to be exercised.
As a test, Cat thought.
As a test of our strength and faith.
Then Rideout turned to Newsom and said something that surprised her.
You are a man of much strength and little faith.
Newsom, although not used to hearing criticism, nevertheless smiled.
I don't have much in the way of Christian faith, that's true, but I have faith in myself. I also have faith in money. How much do you want?
Rideout returned the smile, exposing teeth that were little more than tiny eroded gravestones. If he had ever seen a dentist, it had been many moons ago. Also, he was a tobacco chewer. Cat's father, who had died of mouth cancer, had had the same discolored teeth.
How much would you pay to be free of your pain, sir?
$10 million,
Newsom replied promptly. Cat heard Melissa gasp.
But I didn't get to where I am by being a sucker. If you do whatever it is you do, expelling, exterminating, exercising, call it what you want, you get the money. In cash, if you don't mind spending the night. Fail, and you get nothing. Except your first and only round trip on a private jet. For that, there will be no charge. After all, I reached out to you.
No.
Rideout said it mildly, standing there beside the bed. Close enough to Cat so she could smell the mothballs that had been recently keeping his dress pants, maybe his only pair, unless he had another to preach in, whole. She could also smell some strong soap.
No? Newsom looked, frankly startled. You tell me no?
Then he began to smile again. This time it was the secretive and rather unpleasant smile he wore when he made his phone calls and did his deals.
I get it. Now comes the curveball. I'm disappointed, Reverend Rideout. I really hoped you were on the level.
He turned to Cat, causing her to draw back a bit.
You, of course, think I've lost my mind, but I haven't shared the investigators' reports with you, have I?
No, she said.
There's no curveball, Rideout said. I haven't performed an expulsion in 5 years. Did your investigators tell you that?
Newsom didn't reply.
He was looking up at the thin, towering man with a certain unease.
Jensen said, "Is it because you've lost your powers? If that's the case, why did you come?"
"It's God's power, sir, not mine, and I haven't lost it. But an expulsion takes great energy and great strength. 5 years ago, I suffered a major heart attack shortly after performing one on a young girl who had been in a terrible car accident. We were successful, she and I, but the cardiologist I consulted in Jonesboro told me that if I ever exerted myself in such a way again, I might suffer another attack, this one fatal."
Newsom raised a gnarled hand, not without effort, to the side of his mouth and spoke to Kat and Melissa in a comic stage whisper.
"I think he wants 20 million.
"What I want, sir, is 750,000.
Newsom just stared at him. It was Melissa who asked, "Why?"
"I am a pastor of a church in Titusville, the Church of Holy Faith, it's called. Only there's no church anymore. We had a dry summer in my part of the world. There was a wildfire, started by drunken campers. My church is now just a concrete footprint and a few charred beams. I and my parishioners have been worshiping in an abandoned gas station, convenience store on the Jonesboro Pike. It is not satisfactory during the winter months, and there are no homes large enough to accommodate us. We are many, but poor."
Kat listened with interest. As con man stories went, this was an excellent one. It had all the right sympathy hooks. Jensen, who still had the body of a college athlete to go with the mind of a Harvard MBA, asked the obvious question.
"Insurance?"
Rideout once more shook his head in that deliberate way, left, right, back to center. He still stood towering over Newsom's state-of-the-art bed like some country-ass guardian angel.
"We trust in God."
"You might have been better off with Allstate," Melissa said. Newsom was smiling. Kat could tell from the stiff way he held his body that he was in serious discomfort. His pills were now half an hour overdue, but he was ignoring the pain because he was interested. That he could ignore it was something she'd known for quite a while now. He could master the pain if he chose to. He had resources. She had thought she was merely irritated with this, but now, probably prompted by the appearance of the charlatan from Arkansas, she discovered she was actually infuriated. It was so wasteful.
"I have consulted with a local builder, not a member of my flock, but a man of good repute who has done repairs for me in the past and quotes a fair price. He tells me that it will cost approximately $750,000 to rebuild."
"Uh-huh," Kat thought.
"We don't have such monetary resources, of course, but then, not even a week after speaking with Mr. Kiernan, your letter came, along with the video disc, which I watched with great interest, by the way."
"I bet you did," Kat thought, "especially the part where the doctor from San Francisco says the pain associated with his injuries can be greatly alleviated by physical therapy, stringent physical therapy."
It was true that nearly a dozen other doctors on the DVD had claimed themselves at a loss. But Kat believed Dr. Dilawar was the only one with the guts to talk straight. She had been surprised that Newsom had allowed the disc to go out with that interview on it. But since his accident, the 6th richest man in the world had slipped a few cogs.
"Will you pay me enough to rebuild my church, sir?"
Newsom studied him. Now there were small beads of sweat just below his receding hairline. Kat would give him his pills soon, whether he asked for them or not. The pain was real enough. It wasn't as though he were faking or anything. It was just,
"Would you agree not to ask for more?"
"I'm talking gentleman's agreement. We don't need to sign anything."
"Yes."
Rideout said it with no hesitation.
"Although if you're able to remove the pain, expel the pain,
I might well make a contribution of some size, some considerable size, what I believe you people call a love offering.
That would be your business, sir. Shall we begin?
No time like the present. Do you want everyone to leave?
Rideout shook his head again, left to right, right to left, back to center.
I will need assistance.
Magicians always do, Cat thought. It's part of the show. Outside, the wind shrieked, rested, then roused itself again. The lights flickered. Behind the house, the generator, also state-of-the-art, burped to life, then stilled. Rideout sat on the edge of the bed.
Mr. Jensen there, I think he looks strong and quick.
He's both, Newsom said. Played football in college, running back, hasn't lost a step since.
Well, a few, Jensen said modestly.
Rideout leaned toward Newsom. His dark, deeply socketed eyes studied the billionaire's scarred face solemnly.
Answer a question for me, sir. What color is your pain?
Green,
Newsom replied. He was looking back at the preacher with fascination.
My pain is green.
Rideout nodded, up, down, back to center, eye contact never lost. Cat was sure he would have nodded with exactly the same look of grave confirmation if Newsom had said his pain was blue or as purple as the fabled people-eater. She thought with some combination of dismay and real amusement, I could lose my temper here. I really could. It would be the most expensive tantrum of my life, but still I could.
And where is it?
Everywhere.
It was almost a moan. Melissa took a step forward, giving Jensen a look of concern. Cat saw him shake his head a little and motion her back to the doorway.
Yes, it likes to give that impression, Rideout said, but it's a liar. Close your eyes, sir, and concentrate. Look for the pain. Look past the false shouts it gives. Ignore the cheap ventriloquism and locate it. You can do this. You must do it if we're to have any success.
Newsom closed his eyes. For a space of about 90 seconds, there was no sound but the wind and the rain spattering against the windows like handfuls of fine gravel. Cat's watch was the old-fashioned wind-up kind, a nursing school graduation present from her father many years ago, and when the wind lulled, the room was quiet enough for her to hear its self-important ticking. And something else. At the far end of the big house, elderly Tanya Marsden, singing softly as she neatened up the kitchen at the end of another day.
Froggy went a-courtin' and he did right, uh-huh.
At last Newsom said,
It's in my chest, high in my chest, or at the bottom of my throat below the windpipe.
Can you see it? Concentrate.
Vertical lines appeared on Newsom's forehead. Scars from the skin that had been flayed open during the accident wavered through these grooves of concentration.
I see it. It's pulsing, in time to my heartbeat.
His lips pulled down in an expression of distaste.
It's nasty.
Rideout leaned closer.
Is it a ball? It is, isn't it? A green ball.
Yes, yes. A little green ball that breathes.
Like the rigged-up tennis ball you undoubtedly have either up your sleeve or in that big black lunchbox of yours, Rev, she thought.
And as if she were controlling him with her mind, instead of just deducing where this foolish little playlet would go next, Rideout said,
Mr. Jensen, sir, there's a lunchbox under the chair I was sitting in. Get it and open it and stand next to me. You need to do no more than that for the moment. Just...
Cat MacDonald snapped. It was a snap she actually heard in her head. It sounded like Roger Miller snapping his fingers during the intro to King of the Road.
She stepped up beside Rideout and shouldered him aside. It was easy. He was taller, but she had been turning and lifting patients for nearly half her life, and she was stronger. "Open your eyes, Andy. Open them right now. Look at me." Startled, Newsom did as she said. Melissa and Jensen, now with a lunchbox in his hands, looked alarmed. One of the facts of their working lives, and Cat's own, at least until now, was that you didn't command the boss. The boss commanded you. You most certainly did not startle him. But she'd had quite enough. In another 20 minutes, she might be crawling after her headlights along stormy roads to the only motel in the vicinity. But it didn't matter. She simply couldn't do this any longer. "This is bullshit, Andy," she said. "Are you hearing me? Bullshit!"
"I think you'd better stop right there," Newsom said, beginning to smile.
He had several smiles, and this wasn't one of the good ones.
"If you want to keep your job, that is, there are plenty of other nurses in Vermont who specialize in pain therapy."
She might have stopped there, but Rideout said, "Let her speak, sir." It was the gentleness in his tone that drove her over the edge. She leaned forward into his space, and the words spilled out in a torrent. "For the last 16 months, ever since your respiratory system improved enough to allow meaningful physiotherapy, I've watched you lie in this goddamn expensive bed and insult your own body. It makes me sick. Do you know how lucky you are to be alive when everyone else on that airplane was killed? What a miracle it was that your spine wasn't severed, or your skull crushed into your brain, or your body burned? No, baked. Baked like an apple from head to toe. You would have lived for days, maybe even 2 weeks in hellish agony. Instead, you were thrown clear. You're not a vegetable. You're not a quadriplegic, although you choose to act like one. You won't do the work. You look for some easier way. You want to pay your way out of your situation. If you died and went to hell, the first thing you'd try to do is grease Satan's palm." Jensen and Melissa were staring at her in horror. Newsom's mouth hung open. If he had ever been talked to in such a fashion, it had been long ago. Only Rideout looked at ease. He was the one smiling now, the way a father would smile at his wayward 4-year-old. It drove her crazy.
"You could have been walking by now. God knows I've tried to make you understand that, and God knows I've told you over and over the kind of work it would take to get you up out of that bed and back on your feet. Dr. Dilawar in San Francisco had the guts to tell you he was the only one, and you rewarded him by calling him a faggot."
"He was a faggot," Newsom said.
His scarred hands had balled themselves into fists.
"You're in pain, yes, of course you are. It's manageable, though. I've seen it managed. Not once, but many times. Not by a rich man who tries to substitute his sense of entitlement for the plain old hard work and tears it takes to get better. You refuse. I've seen that, too, and I know what always happens next. The quacks and confidence men come, the way leeches come when a man with a cut leg wades into a stagnant pond. Sometimes the quacks have magic creams. Sometimes they have magic pills. The healers come with trumped-up claims about God's power, the way this one has. Usually the marks get partial relief. Why wouldn't they, when half the pain is in their heads, manufactured by lazy minds that only understand it will hurt to get better?"
She raised her voice to a wavering, childlike treble and bent close to him.
"Daddy, it hurts!"
"But the relief never lasts long because the muscles have no tone. The tendons are still slack. The bones haven't thickened enough to accommodate weight-bearing. And when you get this guy on the phone to tell him the pain's back, if you can, do you know what he'll say? That you didn't have faith enough. If you used your brains on this the way you did on your manufacturing plants and various investments, you'd know there's no living tennis ball sitting at the base of your throat. You're too fucking old to believe in Santa Claus, Andy."
Tanya had come into the doorway and now stood beside Melissa, staring with wide eyes and a dish wiper hanging limp in one hand. You're fired, Newsom said, almost genially.
Yes, Cat said. Of course I am. Although I must say that this is the best I've felt in almost a year.
If you fire her, Rideout said, I'll have to take my leave.
Newsom's eyes rolled to the Reverend. His brow was knitted in perplexity. His hands now began to knead his hips and thighs, as they always did when his pain medication was overdue.
She needs educating. Praise God's holy name.
Rideout leaned toward Newsom, his own hands clasped behind his back. He reminded Cat of a picture she'd seen once of Washington Irving's school teacher, Ichabod Crane.
She's had her say. Shall I have mine?
Newsom was sweating more heavily, but he was smiling again.
Have at her. Rip and roar. I believe I want to hear this.
Cat faced him. Those dark, socketed eyes were unsettling, but she met them.
Actually, so do I.
Hands still clasped behind his back, pink skulls shining mutedly through his thin hair, long face solemn, Rideout examined her. Then he said,
You've never suffered yourself, have you?
Cat felt an urge to flinch at that, or look away, or both. She suppressed it.
I fell out of a tree when I was 11 and broke my arm.
Rideout rounded his thin lips and whistled, one tuneless, almost toneless note.
Broken arm while you were 11. Yes, that must have been excruciating.
She flushed. She felt it and hated it, but couldn't stop the heat.
Belittle me all you want. I based what I said on years of experience dealing with pain patients. It is medical opinion.
Now he'll tell me he's been expelling demons or little green gods or whatever they are since I was in rompers. But he didn't.
I'm sure,
he soothed.
I'm sure you're good at what you do. I'm sure you've seen your share of fakers and posers. You know their kind. And I know yours, miss, because I've seen it many times before. They're not usually as purty as you.
Finally, a trace of an accent pretty coming out as purty.
But their condescending attitude toward pain they have never felt themselves. Pain they can't even conceive of is always the same. They work in sick rooms. They work with patients who are in varying degrees of distress, from mild pain to deepest, searing agony. And after a while, it all starts to look either overdone or outright fake to them, isn't that so?
That's not true at all, Cat said.
What was happening to her voice? All at once it had grown small.
No. When you bend their legs and they scream at 15 degrees or even at 10, don't you think first in the back of your mind, then more and more toward the front that they are lollygagging, refusing to do the hard work, perhaps even fishing for sympathy? When you enter the room and their faces go pale, don't you think, oh, now I have to deal with this lazy slug of a thing again? Haven't you, once fell from a tree and broke your arm, for the Lord's sake, become more and more disgusted when they beg to be put back into bed and given more morphine or whatever?
That's so unfair,
Cat said, but now her voice was little more than a whisper.
Once upon a time, when you were new at this, you knew agony when you saw it,
Rideout said.
Once upon a time you would have believed in what you are going to see in just a few minutes, because you knew in your heart that a malignant outsider was there. I want you to stay so I can refresh your memory and the sense of compassion that's gotten lost along the way.
Some of my patients are whiners, Cat said, and looked defiantly at Newsom. I suppose that sounds cruel, but sometimes the truth is cruel. Some are malingerers. If you don't know that, you're blind or stupid. I don't think you're either.
He bowed as if she had paid him a compliment, which, in a way, she supposed she had.
Of course I know. But now in your secret heart, you believe all of them are malingerers. Like a soldier who spent too long in battle, you've become inured. Mr. Newsome is invaded. I tell you, infested. There's a demon inside him so strong, it has become a god, and I want you to see it when it comes out. It will improve matters for you considerably, I think. Certainly, it will change your outlook on pain.
And if I choose to leave?
Rideout smiled. No one will hold you here, Miss Nurse. Like all of God's creatures, you have free will. I would not ask others to constrain it or constrain it myself. But I don't believe you're a coward. Merely calloused. Case hardened.
You're a fraud, Cat said. She was furious, on the verge of tears.
No, Rideout said, once more speaking gently. When we leave this room, with or without you, Mr. Newsome will be relieved of the agony that's been feeding on him. There will still be pain, but with the agony gone, he'll be able to deal with mere pain. Perhaps even with your help, miss, once you've had a necessary lesson in humility. Do you still intend to leave?
I'll stay, she said, then said, give me the lunchbox. But,
Jensen began. Give it over, Rideout said. Let her inspect it by all means, but no more talk. If I am meant to do this, it's time to begin.
Jensen gave her the long black lunchbox. Cat opened it. Where a workman's wife might have packed her husband's sandwiches and a little Tupperware container of fruit, she saw an empty glass bottle with a wide mouth. Inside the domed lid, held by a wire clamp meant to secure a thermos, was an aerosol can. There was nothing else. Cat turned to Rideout. He nodded. She took the aerosol out and looked at the label, nonplussed.
Pepper spray?
Pepper spray, Rideout agreed. I don't know if it's legal in Vermont, probably not would be my guess, but where I come from, most hardware stores stock it.
He turned to Tanya.
You are?
Tanya Marsden, I cook for Mr. Newsome.
Very nice to make your acquaintance, ma'am. I need one more thing before we begin. Do you have any sort of club, a baseball bat, perhaps?
Tanya shook her head. The wind gusted again. Once more the lights flickered and the generator burped in its shed behind the house.
What about a broom?
Oh, yes, sir.
Fetch it, please.
Tanya left. There was silence except for the wind. Cat tried to think of something to say and couldn't. Droplets of clear perspiration were trickling down Newsome's narrow cheeks, which had also been scarred in the accident. He had rolled and rolled while the wreckage of the Gulf Stream burned in the rain behind him.
I never said he wasn't in pain, just that he could manage it if he'd only muster half the will he showed during the years he spent building his empire.
But what if she was wrong?
Even if I am, that doesn't mean there's some sort of living tennis ball inside him, sucking his pain the way a vampire sucks blood.
There were no vampires, and no gods of agony. But when the wind blew hard enough to make the big house shiver in its bones, such ideas seemed almost plausible.
Tanya came back with a broom that looked like it had never swept so much as a single pile of floor dirt into a dustpan. The bristles were bright blue nylon. The handle was painted wood, about 4 feet long. She held it up doubtfully.
This what you want?
I think it will serve,
Rideout said, although to Cat he didn't sound entirely sure. It occurred to her that Newsome might not be the only one in this room who had slipped a few cogs lately.
I think you better give it to our skeptical nurse. No offense to you, Mrs. Marsden, but younger folks have quicker reflexes.
Looking not offended in the slightest, looking relieved, in fact, Tanya held out the broom. Melissa took it and handed it to Cat.
What am I supposed to do with it? Cat asked. Ride it?
Rideout smiled, briefly showing the stained and eroded pegs of his teeth.
You'll know when the time comes. If you've ever had a bat or a raccoon in the room with you, just remember, first the bristles, then the stick.
To finish it off, I suppose, then you put it in the specimen bottle?
As you say.
So you can put it on a shelf somewhere with the rest of your dead gods?
He didn't respond to this. Hand the spray can to Mr. Jensen, please.
Cat did so. Melissa asked, What do I do?
Watch and pray if you know how. On my behalf, as well as Mr. Newsom's, for my heart to be strong.
Cat, who saw a fake heart attack coming, said nothing. She simply moved away from the bed, holding the handle of the broom in both hands. Rideout sat down beside Newsom with a grimace. His knees popped like pistol shots.
Listen to me, Mr. Jensen.
Yes?
You'll have time. It will be stunned. But be quick, just the same. As quick as you were on the football field, all right?
You want me to mace it?
Rideout once more flashed his brief smile, but Cat thought he really did look ill.
It's not mace. That's illegal, even where I come from. But you've got the right idea, all right. Now I'd like silence, please.
Wait a minute. Cat propped the broom against the bed and ran her hands first up Rideout's left arm, then his right. She felt only plain cotton cloth and the man's scrawny flesh beneath.
Nothing up my sleeve, Miss Cat, I promise you.
Hurry up, Newsom said. This is bad. It always is, but the goddamn stormy weather makes it worse.
Hush, Rideout said. All of you, hush.
They hushed. Rideout closed his eyes. His lips moved silently. 20 seconds ticked past on Cat's watch, then 30. Her hands were damp with perspiration. She wiped them one at a time on her sweater, then took hold of the broom again. We look like people gathered at a deathbed, she thought. Outside, the wind snarled along the gutters. Rideout opened his eyes and leaned close to Newsom.
God, there is an evil outsider in this man. An outsider feeding on his flesh and bones. Help me cast it out, as your son cast out the demons from the possessed man of the Gadarenes. Help me speak to the little green god of agony. Inside Andrew Newsom, in your own voice of command.
He leaned closer. He curled the long fingers of one arthritis-swollen hand around the base of Newsom's throat, as if he intended to strangle him. He leaned closer still and inserted the first 2 fingers of his other hand into the billionaire's mouth. He curled them and pulled down the jaw.
Come out, he said.
He had spoken of command, but his voice was soft, silky, almost cajoling. It made the skin on Cat's back and arms prickle.
Come out in the name of Jesus. Come out in the names of all the saints and martyrs. Come out in the name of God. Who gave you leave to enter and now commands you to leave? Come out into the light. Leave off your gluttony and come out.
There was nothing.
Come out in the name of Jesus. Come out in the names of the saints and martyrs.
His hands flexed slightly, and Newsom's breath began to rasp.
No, don't go deeper. You can't hide, you small evil. Come out into the light. Jesus commands you. The saints and martyrs command you. God commands you to leave off dining on this man and come out.
A cold hand gripped Kat's upper arm and she almost screamed. It was Melissa. Her eyes were huge. Her mouth hung open. In Cat's ear, the housekeeper's whisper was as harsh as sandpaper.
Look!
A bulge, like a goiter, had appeared in Newsom's throat, just above Rideout's loosely grasping hand.